Welcome to A World on Fire Season 2, and we are here with a bonus episode. We finished up our Season 2 coverage with the ending of Kingdom Come, and that was a great episode. I had all three of my chums here with me, but there's always time to throw in one more little episode, especially when it concerns Christmas. And if I'm going to talk Christmas comics, I have to have on my buddy Mart. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you. All keyed up for the season, got my bells jingling, my tinsel tangled. I'm very, very happy to have a Christmas comic.
Yes, you are literally the Christmas comic guy on social media. I don't know anybody else that is more enamored with or has more fun with, the holiday-themed comics.
I think I just associate comics with Christmas, basically, because when I was a kiddie, we had every Christmas you get... Well, in the UK, we call them Christmas annuals, but they weren't annuals in the US sense. They were sort of, your hardback album type books. And it was one of the only ways that we would ever see things like DC and Marvel comics in the 70s in colour, because we used to have just put it with black and white reprints. And if they could ever get a Christmas story inside the Christmas annual, it was even better. So it just takes me back to the happiest day of the year, reading a Christmas comic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just so to put it out there right now, I'll throw it out there. We're going to talk about something that's golden age here. We have a Batman comic when I see covers like this, and this particular comic we're going to talk about, the cover date is 30 years before I was even born. But these comic covers really make me think about Christmas time and being a kid. I really, really love them. This is Batman number 27 from cover dated February, March, 1945. But it came out, a couple weeks before Christmas, 1944 here. It's a cover by Jack Burnley. And I know his name. I know he did some Superman work as well. That's mostly where I know his name from. But what about Jack Burnley and this cover here?
It's wonderful. I mean, Jack Burnley, I know he did the famous portrait of Superman that was in the DC Comics offices for many, many years. And I think, I'm not sure, was he the co-creator of Starman? Anyway, he was certainly involved. But as for the cover, it's just, I mean, I think you can't get a poor Jack Burnley cover. It's glorious. It's got Santa Claus pulling his big sack of toys on his back, Batman striding happily beside him, Robin behind sort of supporting the heaving sack. It's, Robin's in Christmas colours anyway. Bright yellow background. You've got season's greetings in those Dickensian type letters from Batman and Robin. And super seasonally, above the logo, you have Back the Sixth Warlord.
Yeah, that's what I love too. It's like, the comic all by itself, just with the Christmas theme and Batman and Robin, is fantastic. And then, I'm kind of dense sometimes. It's just the date didn't strike me, but... this is right the wartime here. So the Back the Sixth Warlord right there at the top, like you said, right?
Yeah, because February, March 1945, so it must have been about sort of October, November 1944 came out. So, yeah, still went into the war there. So the Sixth Warlord, I mean, it's amazing how the people were putting forward the money themselves to help support the war efforts. Very impressive.
Yeah, fantastic. Like you said, it's just, I don't know that I've ever seen a bad Jack Burnley cover. I've not read a ton of his work, but what I have seen is always just marvelous stuff. And, you know, we're going to jump into the interior here. So, you know, we have there are four stories actually in this book, and we're going to talk about the very last story. You know, there's a the lead story has our buddy. That one's kind of funny. The Penguin's Apprentice. And then you have another one called The Pearl of Peril. And that one is Pistol Packing Pete is the villain in that one. I'm not very familiar with Pistol Packing Pete, but the heck of a name there. I like it. And then the third story is Voyage into Villainy. And that's another one that has some wild names in it that I do not, you know, it's not your typical, you know, comic where you have, you know, Joker and Penguin and this one and that one. It's other than the Penguin being in the first one, it's kind of all more one-off people. But we're going to talk about A Christmas Peril, which is the fourth story. Last story in this comic book here. And here's something interesting. I would love to hear your thoughts on this man as well. So when I looked at the credits for this, it said this, the writer was Don C. Cameron, and I was not familiar with his name. Do you know any, did you recognize his name?
I mean, I recognize the name because it comes up in terms of when you read the old Golden Age stories. And I mean, I know that he co-created such amazing villains as the Cavalier and Tweedledum and Tweedledee. He wrote Aquaman stories and very, you know, did the rounds of the DC comic backups in the olden days. But he seems to be a stalwart and did an awful lot of just decent, strong stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking him up too, and I was just like, wow, I couldn't believe, you know, I didn't recognize this name and how the some very big contributions to, you know, the Batman line of books. That was really like, oh wow, how did I not know this guy's name? And then aside of that, he even, you know, did some work in Superman, where, you know, he helped create the Toy Man. I was wow.
Yes, as he wrote the earlier Superboy stories and more fun comics. And apparently he wrote detective novels as well. And he just seems to be a total stalwart. I mean, someone that's, you know, he's not as well known as maybe he ought to be. Like, I mean, like, again, like David Vernon Reed, David V. Reed, who I thought wasn't around until the 70s when I was reading the comics in the 70s. And then you look back and he's going right back to the 1950s, you know, creating Deadshot and the like. So there's so many stalwarts that we perhaps don't know as well as we should. And certainly, you know, Donald Cameron seems to have had a lot of imagination.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with you there. And then I did see, too, it was pretty sad. He didn't even live to be 50 years old and he passed away before he was 50. I thought, wow, that's tough.
Yeah, I think they just work themselves to death. A lot of them, I mean, I think probably, you know, sits hunched over the typewriter with their drinks and their fags. Sorry, apologies to the Cameron family. I may be mischaracterizing him, but this, I mean, if you look at the output and the amount of words on the page, and you know the clever convoluted plots that they did compared to today, I mean, gosh, they really, really did work.
Yeah, absolutely. It says, I think he said it says he died of cancer. So, you know, maybe a big smoker. You know, that happens a lot. It was such just a common thing back then that, you know, I think most people didn't have any idea how bad they actually were for you. So, yeah, kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his DC credits for the list there, I mean, it looks like he must have had a couple of hundred at least in the space of about 10 years or something.
Yeah. He seemed like quite a workhorse for them there. So I'm glad I got to kind of research the name a little bit, and I'm definitely going to be on the lookout for it. But, you know, moving on to artwork, we have Pencils and Inks by Jerry Robinson. And that's a name I do know. It seemed maybe I would say in the last at least 10, 15, maybe even 20 years, a lot of the Batman artists and writers, and especially the people that were doing some ghost work, have really been brought to light. Sometimes, you know, with the Bill Finger documentary that had come out, which was very good, and, you know, some other things that it's really brought a lot of these other names more out in the forefront as well. And Jerry Robinson, you know, he's definitely a guy that I definitely like and respect quite a bit. How about you?
Billy, I don't know what you're talking about. This story is not by Bob Kane. Bob Kane did. No, I mean, Jerry Robinson, I mean, you know, total fame, isn't he? I know it was disputed by Bob Kane and various other people, but I think the general consensus seems to be that he came up with the most of the idea for the Joker, you know, based on the Conrad Veidt, The Man Who Laughs film. And yeah, I mean, he drew so many of the stories. It's interesting that here is his artwork's very interesting because it's a little bit scratchier than I'm used to. I don't know whether he normally work with an inker, but I think he'd do it all himself here. And it's very nice work as ever.
Yes, I really enjoyed it as well. And the letters were Irish Knapp, which that's one of those names that, you know, you read enough DC, you're going to see that name a lot, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he didn't need to design the Action Comics logo, the Superman logo. It's so many logos. I mean, if you're interested in logos like me and you ever read, I don't know whether you've ever seen the famous letter of Todd Klein, does a series called Logo Studies, which you can generally access either via his website or via Facebook. And he just goes down the years and looks at the comic book logos and how they've changed. And so many for about the first 20 years are Irish Snap. And of course, he's responsible for the very sort of whimsical fun lettering that you get on the, you know, when in the house adverts. And he's just, again, just seems to be a wonderful, wonderful talent and stylist. Really, we're lucky to have him.
Yeah, and I know sometimes too, colorists and letterers get left behind, you know, the pencils and the inks, but they really are people that, you know, need to be right out there in the spotlight as well, especially when you look at things like logos and stuff like that. Like you said, that's one of the things that's very, very recognizable right next to, you know, the characters themselves, right?
Totally. I mean, this first of original Batman logo from the Golden Age, just with smiley Batman, I just see it and it just fills me with joy. And to him, it was probably something he did, you know, maybe knocked off in a couple of hours, but it's just lasted down the ages. I mean, you could probably, you could still put that in a Batman comic these days and it would work.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, well, I'm going to, borrow some verbiage here from the DC fandom website for a quick little synopsis, and then we're going to dive right into this splash page because I cannot wait to talk about it because it is fantastic. So, all right, well, A Christmas Peril. Batman and Robin learn of a criminal racket during Christmas Eve when they find the man behind the crimes, a rich and spoiled brat named Scranton Loring. After making him realize the error of his ways, the young man reveals that the idea for the crimes came from his lawyers, and they are eventually captured by the dynamic duo. Using his wealth for good, the young boy makes good actions towards the people he harmed during his criminal spree. So, all right, well, let's jump into this splash page here because I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on it. I absolutely love it, but why don't you describe this page and what's going on and what it means here to you?
Oh, it's fantastic. We have Batman and Robin atop a Christmas tree. Well, Robin's at the top of the Christmas tree. Batman's diving down towards Santa, who's standing in front of this horrible little boy, Scranton, but he's protecting the boy from three behatted hoods who are coming towards them. There's such a lot going on, but it's so elegantly composed. It's not overly busy. It makes you want to read the story. And at the front of it, under the main logo, you've got quite a large, probably taking up a quarter of the page, a large wreath. And inside that, you've got the usual little sort of precis of the story of what's coming. But Irish Snap's done it with so many little letters in this Dickensian medieval type, well, not medieval, type stylish font that you associate with Christmas. And I just think the whole thing's excellent. How about you?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's, like you said, there's this Christmas tree. It's got to be about, I'd say, at least 15 feet tall. You know, it's got all these beautiful decorations on it and the star at the top. And like I said, there's Batman and Robin, like, on the tree itself. And I love how Robin's kind of crouched there at the top and Batman, it looks as if he's, you know, kind of diving down towards, like you said, Santa Claus here and the boy to protect them from these hoods. And the hoods, I like how they all have matching outfits. They all have purple coats and purple hats. And, of course, they have Tommy guns. So they look like something straight out of, an Al Capone movie here. And a cigarette, too, the one man has.
Oh, quite right. He had drooping down in the nose on those guys as well. Of course, you know, purple's the color of evil. And I suppose also purple's the color of evil here because you've got the contrast with the green, so it works wonderfully.
Yeah, and, our friend that we already talked about here, Don C. Cameron, he has a nice bit of a text inside this beautiful wreath here as well, so why don't you regale us with that, Martin?
Any resemblance between this adventure and Dickens' beloved masterpiece, A Christmas Carol, is strictly intentional. For the great English novelist wrote of the spirit of brotherhood that stirs anew in the world when the mystical star of the wise men shines at Yuletide. And that is the guiding beacon of the mighty Batman and Robin, as they fare forth once more against evil and injustice to tell an old story in a startling new way, A Christmas Peril.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's just, if you can't get into the Christmas mood by reading something like this, I check for a pulse. You must be dead.
Absolutely. I mean, you can tell he's a fella who enjoys his words, and he puts them down so well.
And I do talk about this, you know, diving into the very next page here. I do talk about this quite a bit, and I know some people might be bored with it, but I do really enjoy older comics. And obviously, this is a very old comic because it's from, oh my gosh, you know, 80 years ago, just about. The quiet moments, the regular moments, the moments where there's not something, you know, perilous going on, especially when you see these heroes doing everyday stuff. And I just can't get enough of this page with Dick and Bruce out Christmas shopping. What do you think?
It's gorgeous. I mean, you know, you've got Bruce wearing there an absolutely fantastic blue waistcoat, blue overcoat, matching hat, and Dick in his obviously green overcoat. And he's got little sort of earmuffs on, little yellow earmuffs matching his scarf. Mm-hmm. And I just love it because it's just six little panels, and in three of them are Christmas shopping, chatting about the price of Christmas trees, $7.98, which you think, well, Bruce is being a bit mean there, but I suppose Batmobiles don't pay for themselves. and then, you know, it dawns on them, there's something going on with the Christmas trees, you know, yes, $7.98 for those, woo, says Dick. And there's other Christmas trees nearby that are just $2. But then it turns out that the guy selling them for $2 is being bullied by two shifty-looking hoods who want him to sell it at a higher price. And, you know, Dick and Bruce obviously want to know what's going on. But, yeah, the composition of the page, it's very simple, but it just works terrifically well. I mean, you've got one of those wonderful Golden Age round panels as panel number four, mm-hmm. when it's a close-up of Dick and Bruce deciding action has to be taken. And then they're right into the next panel and then Batman and Robin duds. And straight away, Robin's bashing this guy. And the impact looks superb. I love this page.
Yeah, I love the writing here as well. You know, Bruce says, those hoodlums seem to be lacking in peace and goodwill. And I love the Dick. You know, he's just a kid. He goes, we'll teach them the proper spirit. I love it.
Well, he knows what's what. I mean, he's a 10-year-old. Glad he's got his, you know, his models. He's going to impose them on them.
Mm-hmm. And Batman says, I see you rats don't believe in Santa Claus. And, oh, Batman and Robin. And like you said, Robin punches the one goon and into a fire, and it's lighting his backside on fire. And he goes, you called that right time, chump. Oh, I love it.
Serves him right. Give him a hot bottom.
Yeah, and then they, you know, grab the one hoodlum and say, you know, hey, you know, who are you working for here? And he says, Happy Hogsby. So they're going to go pay a visit to Mr. Hogsby here, aren't they?
Oh, Mr. Hogsby, the gang chieftain, yeah. And then we cut away to Mr. Hogsby's hideout. Just makes me laugh just saying his name. Yeah. He's just laughing. You know, he's got his cigar there laughing away. Ha ha, Santa Claus is sure paying off this year. And then the gangsters speaking in their sub-Damon Runyon type dialogue, you know, accents. Why didn't we ever think of this before? The whole world's crazy about Christmas trees. And the other guy says, even at four times the regular price, ha ha ha. And it's really cool that, you know, Batman and Robin just straight in there, dive into the hideout, start beating up on the guys and, you know, basically saying, explain yourself. I love this. Do you like this page?
Oh, it's fantastic. And then Batman and Robin, I like how it doesn't even look like they are looking in through a window or investigate or anything. They just kick the door in. I love it.
Well, yeah, might makes right.
Happy Hogsby, I believe. And Hogsby says, Batman. And one of the guys says, I'll fix him. And he gets his gun out. But they start to, you know, clobbering these guys. But then it looks like, you know, Dick even tackles one of them. And he starts questioning Hogsby here, Batman, and says, you know, hey, you know, he goes, what's the idea starting a fight in a, or Hogsby says to Batman, I'm sorry, what's the idea starting a fight in a respectable business place? And Batman says, and in the second place, hogging the Christmas tree market through terrorism isn't respectable. Hogging, yeah. I love it.
Yeah, you can't say fairer than that. I noticed that you know, we've got another of the round panels that I love in here, but also mm-hmm. in the panel before that, at the bottom of page three, it's as in page two, where we have a picture when Batman and Robin enter the scene, and it's looking up from right down by the drain on the beyond the pavement, looking up at a lamppost. Here you've got it's a ground's eye view again. You're looking up from just below the floor. And I like how Jerry Robinson is varying the angles for drama.
Yeah. Like you said, some of them are just straight on and other ones are from the bottom up. And that's a good call out there for the previous page there. The one with the sewer drain it shows and the lamppost and the trees in the background. Like for a Golden Age comic, that is an awful lot of detail there, you know, because sometimes the detail work wasn't there, I feel, in Golden Age. But, you know, Jerry Robinson, he's got a lot of detail in some of these panels.
He does. Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he even throws in bystanders in the front and the back of the panel and alters the lighting. It's fantastic stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, Hogsby says, all I do is manage the business. If my agents use crude methods, can I help it? And he says, get smart to yourself, Batman. With Scranton Loring, the multimillionaire, behind me, how can anybody make trouble for me? And Batman says, be patient just a little while. You'll find out. And then we got another of the circle panels. And like you said, I love them. They're just, it's not something that's been done for a very long time. So, you know, I like it quite a bit seeing them.
Yeah, I mean, I associate the circular panels. I don't think we have any of the story with the dropped cap, the dropped capital at the start of the dialogue panels, you know, where you get, you'll have a little, well, you know, the first letter will be in a little mm-hmm. circle or something like that. And I think they hadn't developed that at this point. But yeah, it's just the visual iconography of the early Batman, the really super. So anytime I see any of it, just makes me happy.
Yeah, and I like, even, you know, back in 1944 or 45 here, you know, Batman, he's not, you know, Bat God yet, obviously, but he is up on things. So he knows, when he heard that name from Hogsby, Scranton Loring, he knew all about him. He said he just inherited the fortune of his uncle, Caleb Loring, better known as Old Scrooge. And Dick says, I never thought anybody could be mean enough to turn Christmas into a racket. And then we get a really neat panel there. It's a small panel, but it shows like this, you know, a beautiful home here, mansion type thing. And it says the Loring Mansion, a gloomy and forbidding pile of marble. It's a neat panel there. It's got the trees and the moon and everything, right?
Oh, it is gloomy. And, you know, and he makes it look a little bit like a mausoleum. I mean, it's such a good panel. I can imagine our pal Cisco having fun with this on his one panel podcast where, you know, they just take a panel out of context and talk about it. And it really does set up the idea that this isn't the nicest person. You're not going to find the nicest people there.
Mm-hmm. And the next two panels, here he is. It's Santa Claus, right? Or maybe.
Yep. It turns out it's actually a chap who is Scranton's uncle, who is there to look after the little boy now that Caleb's died. But, you know, will the little boy Scranton welcome his Santa Claus? I mean, what a lovely effort he's gone to turn up at Christmas time dressed as Santa.
Yeah, and there's like a butler type guy that walks in and he goes, the master will see you now, Mr. Loring. And he goes, right, Gulliver, what a surprise the little fellow will get meeting me for the first time. And then he thinks, poor Scranton's life must have been dull with my grasping brother Caleb. As his new guardian, I'll try to make it up to him. And we do see the young Scranton here sitting at a desk. And I don't know how young he's supposed to be, but this is a really, again, a lot of detail in this panel here at the bottom, isn't there?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, you've got young Scranton, who probably, I think, maybe about 12, 14, sitting mm-hmm. at his desk, looking over his ledgers, lamp behind him. You've got a globe in the foreground in the corner. And then at the back of the panel, it's wonderful. You've got Uncle Santa Claus just peeping through the door, spotting him. It really, really is a nice scene setter.
Yeah, and he's the young Scranton is talking about, you know, nearly $1 million of this and that. And it does say he's the richest boy in the world. So I was like, wow, that's, you know, a pretty big statement there. But in comes Santa Claus. Merry Christmas, Scranton. And Scranton says, my word, Eggers, where are you? And he says, Eggers, how did this lunatic get in here? I was like, wow, he's going really mean already, right?
He is, really. You think that even with a beard, although I think the beard might be there the whole time, he might recognise his Uncle Timothy. Although, in the Golden Age Batman, people were always turning up claiming to be relatives. I mean, didn't it happen to Dick Grayson a few times? We're going to look after you and take away your fortune now, that sort of thing. So maybe he really had never met or heard of Uncle Timothy.
Yeah, and it does come out here. He says that he's, you know, his new guardian. And again, if Timothy is underage, obviously the Santa Claus here, Uncle Timothy, would kind of be in charge of things. But, you know, there's two gentlemen here. We saw one already, this Eggers, and there's going to be another one as well, Gulliver the butler, where they're kind of in on a bit of a scam here. And they also point out the fact that, oh, you don't take over as basically like his, you know, executor or, you know, a guardian until January the 1st. So, you know, you can't do anything. You can't tell this little kid what to do here.
Absolutely. So he's up on things. He might have warned young Scrooge Scranton that his uncle was going to come, but I think we'll find out maybe there's a reason for that. But yeah, I mean, I'm actually quite impressed by this kid anyway, because on the previous page when we first meet him, he's thinking, let me see, $953,000 at 33 1/3%, with 10% deducted for operating costs. I mean, come on, this kid could make good money as an accountant if he wasn't rich.
Yeah, he doesn't need to run any kind of scam to, you know, make some money here. But, you know, his uncle here says, I thought it would be happy. You'd be, make you happy if I played Santa Claus. Most boys your age would be pleased. And he says, most boys are stupid. But I'm interested in the really important things, like Uncle Caleb was. He taught me all I know. And Timothy says, all Caleb knew was how to get rich at other people's expense. They used to call him Old Scrooge. And Scranton says, they call me Young Scrooge, and I'm proud of it. It's like, wow.
He's not shy of sort of, you know, sort of leaning into his meanness, but it is great. I mean, you know, if you're going to use A Christmas Carol as a template for a comic book story, you know, you're not actually going to go the full three ghosts. Then, mm-hmm. you know, at least have someone who's proud to be a Scrooge. And I don't know. I mean, he's terrible. But I quite like this kid because he's entertaining.
Mm-hmm. And he does say, while others throw their money away, I'm making $250,000 by cornering all Christmas trees in town and quadrupling prices. Shrewd, eh? And he goes, shrewd? It's incredible. And, you know, he goes, I won't permit it. As your guardian, I insist that you drop this monstrous swindle on Christmas Eve. And he says, how I understand what Uncle Caleb meant when he said you'd never amount to much, Uncle Timothy. And then here's where we get the two people butting in here. And he says, I'm sure this might be the butler, Gulliver here, possibly.
Yeah.
He says, you don't become Scranton's guardian until January 1st. Meanwhile, I have power of attorney to handle all his business affairs. And he says, you're in favor of a scheme? And he says, oh, I'm sorry, it's Eggers. That's the Eggers character. Because Scranton says, Eggers originated the scheme and has handled most of the details. And he says, we've gone too far now to stop, even if we wanted to. And we do see somebody watching in the background here, right?
We do. It's Batman and Robin coming through the curtains. I mean, they're tiny, but they're so distinctive. It's really impressive. And then the next instant, season's greetings, says Batman. And Timothy's going, Batman and Robin, aren't you thrilled, Scranton? And Scranton says, why, they're stupid, too, doing all the things they do for nothing.
He thinks they should charge. Oh, man. Batman says, Robin, I'm afraid our only chance is to take young Scrooge out for a little airing. Robin says, check. And he goes, catch. And he pushes Scranton over towards Batman, who picks him up. And Edgar says, stop it immediately, you ruffians. And they grab him and hoist him out the window, right?
Absolutely. Just drag him over their shoulders like a sack. He's a lucky little lad. Look, how many young kids would just give their eye teeth to be sort of going through Gotham City swinging around with Batman and Robin? And that's exactly what he's doing very, very soon.
Yeah, I like how as they're going out the window, he Scranton says, help, police! That's fantastic. I mean, yeah. The cops would probably be on Batman's side anyway.
Oh, I think so. But suddenly he's all for the law.
But they start swinging around Gotham, and Dick actually, you know, Robin is holding on to young Loring here, and they're flying through there. There's a cityscape at the moon, and then there's one of those circle panels that zooms right in on Scranton and Robin. And Scranton says, please don't let me go. And he goes, not on purpose anyway. I love Absolutely. It.
It's great. Okay. In that panel, one thing that's quite nice that I've just noticed is, I don't know whether you're reading a reprint or whether you've got it on screen, but if you've got it on screen and you sort of go in close, if you look at Robin's hand, you'll see that, you know, he's there, he's holding the bat rope, but it's in his hand and it's coming out of his hand at another angle as it would do, rather than going just straight down the vertical of his hand. And that just shows some real thought put into it.
Yeah, I'm reading it on the app here, and yep, I can see that. If you zoom in on there, it looks really, you can really notice that. It's great.
Yeah, and I love it in the next panel when Batman and Robin are showing young Scranton that there's a fire. Oh, you know, where the Christmas trees were being sold a couple of hours ago, but thugs set fire to the shop because the people wouldn't give in to their schemes. And just the way the, I don't know whether this is the way it was called in the original comic, probably close, but just the way the fire is depicted, it's not like the way you normally get fire with just sort of a few swirly outlined flames. He's really, Joey, he's really putting some detail in sort of the like the little smoke effects and swirling, and it just looks tremendous.
Yeah, that is a fantastic panel there, because you just see, you know, Robin on the left, Batman on the right, and Scranton in the middle, and you just see, you know, there's it's like a dark shadow, like they're silhouettes, I should say. And like you said, it's really the coloring too here is great, where, you know, the buildings are kind of like old and this like reddish clay kind of color. And then like the smoke too, like you said, it's fantastic. Jerry Robinson deserves all the credit in the world. You know, that panel alone is fantastic.
Absolutely. I mean, hopefully young artists will be studying this at some point, taking some tips from it. But it's very, very sad though, finding out, you know, what's becoming of the people who aren't sort of getting behind this scheme. I mean, you know, Scranton, Scrooge Scranton, he must be so hard-hearted that he just doesn't care.
Yeah, he basically says, since you've gone to all this trouble to impress me, I suppose I can have Eggers send them a check. And then we see, I think, a fireman saying, nothing worth salvaging, Chief. And Robin says, if you think you can smash people's dreams with your greedy financial operations, then make things right by writing a check. And Scranton says, I beg your pardon. Are you insulting me? And Batman says, no quarreling. Come on, we're going to follow the old couple home. And and they do, but I like Batman. No quarreling.
They do. And wow, what is lovely is in the previous panel, again, just in the corner of the panel where they're watching the fire, and you can see they're not silhouettes this time. Just in the corner, you've got the old couple, and it's so wonderfully drawn, so simply drawn, you know, almost Alex Toth levels of simplicity, but so effective the way you can just see the, you know, the in the body language, the way they're just heartbroken as the man holds his wife.
Yes, it's again, Robinson here. Yeah, the visual storytelling, again, this is 1945, basically. So the visual storytelling by Robinson here, that, you know, many decades ago, that tells you what kind of a pro he was. And they do then follow the people home, right? And there's Batman, Robin, and Scranton. And this is a pretty glum scene here, isn't it?
It's very, very sad. I mean, it's Bob Cratchit levels of sadness, because you've got the old lady saying to the heroes in Scranton, my son is dead and my daughter-in-law ill. My husband and I have barely been able to earn enough to keep the children alive. And you can see one little kitty in the background watching, and then in the bed, there's the sick daughter-in-law. And it's just really, really sad.
Mm-hmm. Batman says to him, you see what they were up against already before your representatives came around? And Scranton says, I never knew people were as miserable as this. And he says, Batman, will it be all right if I give them what money I have with me? Not as charity. I'd really like to. Batman says, of course, Scranton. And Dick says, is it possible he has a heart after all? Because of a wad of cash there.
But I think it is possible, because it's probably the first time he's ever been out in the city and seen the lives that most people have to suffer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially that, you know, during that decade, you know, in the previous one as well. There were some very, very hard times for people, you know, and I guess, you know, if you had only been raised in a very wealthy family, you probably didn't realize how bad life could be for others, right?
Absolutely. So it looks like, you know, there may be some hope for Scranton.
Yeah, but Uncle Tim here, a.k.a. Santa Claus, he's trying to keep an eye on Gulliver and Eggers here. And they talk to him amongst each other, and they say to each other, with Uncle Tim against us and Batman in the picture, we better move fast, Gulliver. And then Gulliver says, I was thinking the same. And Uncle Tim's watching in the background, and he says, I don't trust either of them. And he listens to their phone conversation with Hogsby. And then he kind of calls them out and says, you know, hey, no wonder my nephew doesn't believe in Christmas. Trained by, you know, money-mad brothers, surrounded by thieves. He goes, and then one of them says, uh-oh, time for sterner measures, Gulliver. And he says, so I see. And they clobber him.
It looks very painful. I mean, I remember those old telephones. That would be sort of, you know, pure Bakelite. And it won't be quite light. That's going to leave a bit of a... bump.
Yeah, he hits him over the head with the phone and knocks him out, and he says that'll keep him quiet for the present. And the other guy says, and it's up to Hogsby to silence the old fool permanently. He could send us all to prison. And that's when we go snap back to, you know, Batman and Robin here, and once again they're trying to teach Scranton here some lessons, and they go to a hospital here, right?
Absolutely. And at the hospital, it's really, really sad. There's a woman called Mrs. Meeker. And her husband's being, we're told by a nurse, is passing through a crisis and mustn't be disturbed, which sounds like he's maybe having some kind of, you know, nervous breakdown, nervous exhaustion, who knows? And the wife saying, poor Joe, he never harmed anyone in his life. And those brutes nearly beat him nearly to death. So, oh, of course, he's one of the, I did read this yesterday, I swear. He's one of the Christmas tree guys. And he's just been beaten up and he's in hospital and he's having a terrible time. And oh, this shocks even Scranton.
Yeah, Batman says Joe Meeker runs a florist shop, Scranton. He was selling Christmas trees at a fair price. And then Scranton says, where's the superintendent? I want Meeker to have the best doctors available and hang the expense. And, you know, Robin then says, now you're starting to act like a human being. And Batman says, you're getting the Christmas spirit of giving, not talking. And I did think in that circular panel there, especially Batman, he kind of looked a little bit like, I'm trying to think of who did Justice League there in the early days. A lot of the, is it Sikowski? It looked a little Sikowski to me.
Yeah, Mike Sikowski, whichever. But yes, he did indeed. He
looks a little like his Batman there in that circular panel to me. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, no, I can see that, you know, because he did a very, very barrel chested and square headed Batman.
Mm-hmm. And then they go into the office and the gentleman says, we'll do everything possible, Mr. Loring, and send the bill to you. And he says, now if only I knew Egger's agent was, I'd give him a piece of my mind. And Batman says, we know, and we'll be glad to show you. So they head over to the Hogsby estate here, don't they?
They do. And it's like, and Batman's thinking as Scranton goes up the steps to try and, you know, hopefully make things a little bit better. Batman's thinking, I'm afraid Scranton has a shock coming, but it may be just what he needs to complete the cure. And they're Scranton at the steps going up to the hood saying, I'm Scranton Loring, put that pistol away and take me to Mr. Hogsby immediately. And the hood says, well, I'll be the warden's pet. Come right in.
Oh, that's great. And there's Hogsby and his gang again. And now they all have gray suits on, except Hogsby. He's in a purple suit.
and then the hood who's brought him in says, announcing his Royal Highness, young Scrooge Loring.
And he says, Eggers, Gulliver, what's the meaning of this? Because they're there now with the hoods, right?
Yeah, and he sees Uncle Tim tied up and he's going, Uncle Tim, is this some kind of silly game? And Santa Tim says, my poor boy, I wish it was, but the truth is I learned Eggers and Gulliver had stolen your fortune. And the guy says, and so I'm going to bump him off nice and quiet with this silenced pistol. It's like he's stepped into a bad situation here. And of course, Batman and Robin are nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, it's you're thinking, when are they going to get into action here? And Scranton shakes his fist at Hogsby and says, is it true? Have you robbed me? Am I poor, penniless after all my efforts to get richer? And Hogsby says, don't let it worry you, kid. You won't need a cent where you and Santa Claus are going. I shall see that the funeral is duly impressive, Master Scranton. And I'm like, wow, so they're going to knock off, you know, Santa Claus here and the kid.
Yeah, but the, I mean, these two guys, Eggers and Gulliver, it's like they're happy to see him in the Santa Killer, but they're not willing to do the work themselves, are they? They want Hogsby to do it. They're just little slime balls.
Mm-hmm. And they grab Scranton, and he's like, Batman, Robin. And the other guy says, what an undignified way for a young multimillionaire to behave.
Sarky git, honestly. Mm-hmm. But luckily at that point, Batman comes in again in a little tiny, tiny background figure, but he's zooming into the room and ready to punch things through, and Robin diving up the chandelier, swinging there to free Scranton from the bad guy. Lovely, lovely final panel on that page. I'm not sure whether the perspective of the figure work is quite in proportion, but it's just such a lot going on. I mean, people didn't read comics to study them the way we're doing it right now, so I think it works.
Mm-hmm. And Batman clobbers one of the hoods and says, your days of using guns on children are over. Dick's, you know, Robin swinging on the chandelier. Be right with you, Scranton. And then he kicks the guy in the face. But, you know, there's a lot of hoods here, and one of them has a gun on Batman. So it looks like Batman's going to get shot, right?
It does. But amazingly, a boy whose whole life has been wholly self-centered till now risks death for one who's befriended him. Scranton runs towards the gun, steps in front of Batman. He's just, you know, he's really found his good heart, and he's being brave.
Mm-hmm. And this, you know, causes the hood to pause for a second and says, you're asking for a kid. And he goes, you can't shoot Batman. Maybe I deserve it, but not him. And Batman says, what? And you see the lines, the surprise lines around his face. And
yeah.
That gives him enough time to run over and clobber the hood here. And the gun goes off, but up into the air. And he says, the only thing I'm sorry about is I'm saving you from the electric chair. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Batman, he's a tough nut even back then. And Dick says, I apologize for everything I said, Scranton. Whatever you've done wrong, you've just made up for it because he saved Batman.
Yeah, I don't think he needed to apologize, little Billy. I mean, what he said was absolutely fair. You know, he's changing now, but he was a scumbag then.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Dick doesn't need to apologize. But, you know, we get another circular panel here, and Scranton says, how can I make up for all the years I've wasted? A little while ago, when I expected to die, I realized I didn't really care for money. That down underneath, I wanted to be like other boys. And Batman, you know, he's got some words for Scranton here.
Yeah, yes, of course you did. And since you're so young, I suspect your misspent life can be corrected before the night is over. And Robin adds, we can just make the stores before they close if we hurry. And there they go on a last-minute shopping spree. It's good. And the kid's going, Scranton, I don't know much about toys. You better give me 3 or 4 of everything. And the store clerk says, yes, sir, a wise choice, Mr. Loring. Master Loring, even. Uncle Tim's going, how am I going to carry them all? How indeed, Billy.
Yeah, so that, and that's fantastic, by the way. That's another, it's just one small panel on a 6-panel page, but it's fun. And there's like, you know, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 figures there. You have some toys, a Christmas tree. It's a really neat panel. I really like that panel quite
a bit. Yeah, you got the goofy Nutcracker as well in the corner. Nutcracker,
yeah. Yeah, and then speaking of panels, as midnight chimes announce the birth of Christmas Day, we see the bat plane here. And it seems like it's playing music, Jingle Bells. So he's got the bat radio on, I guess. And there's toys all over it. What about this?
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, again, you know, circular panel. Around the circular panel, it's all black. The cityscape is black silhouette apart from the clock face. And you've got these green Christmas lights on the bat plane. It's just absolutely wonderful. In the next panel, you get a better view of the Batplane with, you know, with that wonderful, wonderful bat face on the front and all the toys, the sack of toys and the Christmas tree stacked up there. Batman standing on the edge of the plane, pulling the sack out, and Santa Tim and Scranton down below, and Robin probably somewhere in the panel, and I'm missing him. Can you spot Robin, Billy?
Is he in the plane? Is he the one driving it?
Oh, that would make sense. Maybe he's doing some bat hovering.
I think, yeah, he's in there saying, wait for me. I think that's him.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Batman's going, less noise, they'll hear us, because they're coming to deliver presents to all the good little boys and girls.
Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, Santa Tim, Uncle Santa Tim on the roof with, I think, Scranton there, and they're going to creep into the house and give them some toys. And, boy, these last four panels, a lot of dialogue here. But there's still the shots of these Christmas trees and, you know, the woman and her husband there that's in the hospital. I really, really like this.
Oh, it's really nice. And it's just got that, you know, sort of a more modern Dickensian flavor that you're among the people, the poor people, and they're getting a little bit of Christmas cheer by a benevolent richer person. I mean, it would have been nice if, like, for example, at the point at which, you know, sort of they're talking about paying the hospital bills, Bruce Wayne said something like, you know, if only we had a decent healthcare system. But even in the UK, we didn't have it in 1948 afterwards. So, but just the idea that you've got to find all this money just to keep yourself healthy, it's so sad. But yes, I'm getting diverted. Yeah, I mean, I love these final five panels. There's so many words that are almost crushing the poor guy in his hospital bed. But I love the fact that, you know, you've got this woman saying, you're going to get well, Joe, Santa Claus has bought us a new and better store. And the guy's going, Mr. Meeker, it's the happiest Christmas we've ever had, after all. And Robin's standing watching, sort of comforting young Scranton, who's wiping his eyes, going, don't be ashamed of bawling. I feel like it myself.
And there's Batman and Santa in the background there, too. Oh, and then the next panel shows all four of them with a Christmas tree, and it says, and the Loring Mansion is no longer gloomy. And Santa says, we didn't save a single present for Scranton. And Batman, or I'm sorry, and then Scranton says, why, I've just been given the finest present on earth, something all my fortune couldn't buy. I've learned the secret of real happiness. I'm going to devote my time and money to spreading cheer the year round, and I only wish everyone could know how much fun I'm going to have. And then Dick looks at him and says, let's tell the world about it, shall we? And what about this final panel here?
The final panel, they're just, you know, breaking the fourth wall, talking to the reader. Uncle Tim's going, greetings to one and all from Uncle Tim. Scranton's going, and from young Scrooge Loring, who won't be known by that name any longer. And Dick's going, and Robin! And Batman, of course, gets the final word. And a Merry Christmas, everybody, from Batman, the end. I mean, 12 little pages just full of absolute cracking story. I mean, I would have enjoyed it if... in the 70s, although it's actually a bit much to think of the Denny O'Neill might have seen this or something, but if in the 70s, you know, when Bruce Wayne set up Victims, Inc., as part of Bruce Wayne's attempt to put something back into helping people, they set up Victims, Inc. to help victims. If they had a young, an elderly, an older Scranton Loring running Victims, Inc. at the Wayne Foundation, I'd like that. There's still time. Do that, DC.
Yeah, yeah, to me. And then, too, I think, I don't know how many times you see... It looks like, if I'm reading this correctly, you can actually see this story reprinted in Batman number 261 from the mid-70s there, which is fantastic because I just feel like until I got the app, it was really, you know, like trying to find a needle in a haystack, trying to find a story like this in a comic. You know what I mean? So I'm glad it's in multiple places.
Absolutely, because also what Best of DC Digest 22, Batman the Dark Knight Archives, Batman the Golden Age Omnibus. So it is wonderful that these stories are so available. And okay, some of the volumes are quite expensive, but if you have, you know, forget the omnibuses, get the DC app for, like, you know, just a few dollars every month, and you've just got such a world of great reading there. History and art, marvelous.
Yeah, I love how they do have, you know, there's a lot of gaps on the DC app for sure, but I do like how these Golden Age books like Superman, Action Comics, Batman, and Detective, I'm pretty sure when I looked, they have at least like the first 20, 30, 40, maybe even first 50 issues of all of those titles. And to me, that's really important to have those on there just to see where all of these things started that are still going today, you know, 80 some years later. It's just, it's incredible. And I'm glad to have them.
Absolutely. I mean, they're utterly foundational texts, as you might say, for university. But it's just good fun to look at, great to read. You see the stories might get repeated down the years, but they're all done of their time, and they've all got something to offer. And something like this, I mean, what do I want in a Christmas story? I want, you know, heaps of sentimentality, a villain who learns a lesson, happy heroes, and this one has it all. And so I'm just... so glad that we get to chat about it.
Yeah, perfect Christmas story here and perfect way to close out 2023. So thanks, Mark, for doing this. I love talking Christmas comics with you. This is at least the second, maybe even the third time you and I have talked Christmas comics, which is absolutely fantastic. Always a joy.
Hey, here's to 2024.
Absolutely. And so if anybody wants to seek you out, I know they can go to your blog, Too Dangerous for a Girl, correct?
Absolutely, Too Dangerous for a Girl blog, which I look at generally a few comics every week. And find me on Twitter, find me on Blue Sky, find me on Facebook, find me commenting at various places, find me down the shops eating chocolate. But just, you know, look after yourselves and happy holidays.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, everybody out there, you know, looking forward to 2024. And once again, thanks, Mark. This was a joy to have you on, my friend.
Lovely chatting to you, Billy. Thanks for having me back.